Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition. Providing a sounding board for mental health issues. And making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thank you for listening. Remember to share our podcast with your friends and family and check us out at mainstreammentalhealth.org. And you can follow us on the Mental Health Radio Network. And today we've got an exciting psychologist who's coming on the air. She's from Canada and she writes for Forbes and Psychology Today. And a particularly interesting article that we saw was 7 reasons entrepreneurs are particularly vulnerable to mental health challenges. And it's particularly interesting to me as I get on a lot of business and electronic shows, and I get asked all the time about small business owners and how to keep them from burning out and like that. So I'm really excited today to introduce Megan Bruneau. And she is really got some good material for us. So with no other shortcuts or anything else, I'd like to introduce Megan Bruneau. Thank you for coming on our show.
Cool, John. Thank you for having me.
Excellent.
Great here. And I should clarify, too, that I'm actually not a psychologist. I feel like the registered psychologist listening might be offended by that. I have a master's in counseling psychology, so I'm a measly therapist, but, you know, can still offer a lot.
Excellent. Thank you very much. No worries.
So, yeah, I'm also an executive coach, and I work a lot with entrepreneurs. I live in New York City and spent a while originally from British Columbia and spent a while really specializing in perfectionism and actually got my start in eating disorder treatment. And then ultimately, yada, 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 moved to New York and began working with a lot of entrepreneurs and realized that those threads of perfectionism actually intersect so many other areas of mental health challenges. And so, you know, for the last few years, my focus has been on entrepreneurs. And I actually have a podcast called The Failure Factor that originally started with Forbes. And with that podcast, my goal has been to normalize, you know, challenge and failure and mental health issues and help people talk more openly about this kind of stuff because we all deal with it, but entrepreneurs are a particularly vulnerable population for a number of reasons, which I imagine we'll talk about today.
Well, you sound like you're right down parallel with mainstream mental health and our reasons in general for destigmatizing mental health. You are very specific, and you're exactly right. The comparisons with eating disorders and entrepreneurship and their struggles are so similar. It is amazing, I think, how much they overlap. So I'm excited to have
totally.
You here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So well, let's look a little bit. You know, one of the big things that I see is a lack of management of stress with small business owners and their ability to balance their executive functionings as a business owner and their human life, their life outside of work.
Yeah.
Is that
totally
what you see?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, you know, there's a number of reasons for that, but there really is this sort of narrative in the entrepreneurial culture or the small business culture that, like, you know, your life kind of becomes work and, you know, you're never not working. And even if you're not physically doing work, you're still thinking about work. And there's a lot of anxiety wrapped up in that. And a lot of guilt that people experience if they do anything that seems indulgent or quote unquote unproductive. And I try to help a lot of people make a shift from that idea of productivity or productive time to meaningful time. because actually we have so many studies to support that it's really important to practice self-care and take vacation and connect with loved ones. And all of that actually makes it so that you are more productive in the time when you are working. But the voice of perfectionism and criticism and everything like that will tell a person otherwise.
And, you know, that's so true. I find that even in what I do, you know, we went about 3 years without having a vacation. My kids are like, Dad, you know, we haven't done anything. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I didn't realize because I was so wrapped up in everything. And, you know, my wife, she's trying to be supportive, so she's not making a big deal about it, but my kids are like, no. And so we were able to, you know, step away from my work and go and have some great experiences. And we've done pretty good since then about making sure we take a couple weeks off here and there every few months and go do things. And, you know, from snow skiing to camping, and actually my kids love hunting and fishing. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, and you know, I mean, I think in the current day, technology, while it's been so helpful, it's also making it so that so many of us can work remotely, which, you know, seems ideal to be able to travel everywhere and work from there and not be bound by, you know, going into an office and things like that. But it also creates this tension in which we feel this pressure to keep working all the time. I mean, I'm heading to Costa Rica tomorrow, actually, and I have to practice what I preach. And I'm like, I am going to have, you know, X number of days in which I see zero clients because I see a lot of my clients remotely. And so, you know, actually making sure that I have that time with myself and I'm able to reflect and connect. Because yes, like that vacation, that, and it doesn't have to be, you know, go off traveling, even taking days off and just having time to have authentic connection is so important, as we know, in mitigating depression, isolation, shame, all of that kind of stuff. And for the health of your relationships. I mean, you know, it's wonderful that you have such a supportive partner. And, you know, she has needs as well. And so being able to make sure that, you know, you have those conversations where her needs are being met or both of your needs are being met and there's some compromise so that the relationship is also as valuable as your work.
It is. And I try to take little vacations during the week. And what I mean by that is I practice martial arts and my instructor is from Korea and he teaches us in Korean. So I walk in, if I'm thinking about work at all, I'm messing up and sometimes ending up on my backside going, whoa.
Right.
Yeah. So it's helped me a lot. My wife is actually a black belt and so am I, and my son and my daughter's almost there. So we're kind of in that together, and it helps me, and it's something we can do as a family. But again, it allows me that vacation during the week, even if it's an hour or 2 hours where I am not at work.
Yeah, and you know, that's on a number of levels, that's great, because you do have to be fully present, especially if it's being taught in Korean. You know, martial arts are certainly a form of mindfulness or of meditation, and so having things in one's life, exercise being one of that, I mean, you know, it's easier to think about work on a run per se than, you know, while you're rock climbing, right? Like we're playing a sport. So it can be really helpful for people to sign up for things or do things that, yes, give them that endorphin high, but also really bring that focus and mindfulness into their life where, you know, they're not thinking about work and they're focusing on something.
Well, and like rock climbing, martial arts, I can't take my social media with me where I can when I run or I'm on the treadmill at the gym. So it's like that I figured out really early was not the avenue. I needed to go where I can't have access to it. And it's such a blessing. It really is. Well, with all of that, we also have, you know, the fear of being an entrepreneur. I mean, you know, there's a certain safety about working for a corporate America where you go in, you do your 40 hours and get your paycheck. When you're the boss, when it's your business, you know, you have your time as the boss and you're in control out there trying to sell, but you have employees and they expect their paycheck. So that means if money isn't coming in, they may get paid and you don't.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fear about that. So how do you deal with that principle?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I think it varies from individual to individual. You know, one thing that I noticed in working with especially a lot of the entrepreneurs here is there's oftentimes a level of privilege in which some of them might have, you know, well, most of them, especially in New York, do have more privileged than perhaps like a small business owner in middle America who doesn't have a safety cushion to fall back on. So I think it's very dependent. You have to be very realistic about how much risk you're willing to take. If you have a family you're supporting, if you have employees you're supporting, recognizing like, okay, what is my backup plan, and having something for that, because, you know, anxiety is attached to uncertainty, right? And the more uncertainty that we have, you know, there's only so much we can sit with that uncertainty before we feel incredibly overwhelmed and we're going to fixate on the worst case scenario or something like that. So I think it's a tough one to generalize an answer to, but I think, I mean, I always recommend working with a coach or a therapist or really working through that anxiety around the unknown and like the worst case scenario, because it is a real fear. Like, this is not, you know, taking this sort of spiritual self-compassionate approach that I really advocate is not about just being like, oh, whatever happens, you know, it'll work out. Like, no, we want to be responsible and recognize, like, and have those kinds of conversations and make sure you feel supported and ask yourself, like, okay, what happens if I do go bankrupt? What happens if I do have to shut down this business? You know, what happens if I can't pay my employees, you know, and just being really realistic and working through all of that. And then at the same time, you know, there is a certain element of risk that we all take as entrepreneurs. And, you know, that's one of the gifts that we bring to this. But at the same time, like, being able to be able to handle that anxiety and that uncertainty, because anxiety will always tell you or lie to you and say, like, you know, take the safe route, do something to numb it, turn me off.
Oh, yeah.
And so what a lot of entrepreneurs do is, you know, they do numb it and they just don't even go there. They don't. And that's why I actually get very frustrated with like a lot of this positive thinking BS, because it's like, just think it'll work out. Just be positive. And that's actually not responsible. I mean, anxiety is there. All of our emotions are there to tell us something and to warn us in a way. And our role is to actually check into that emotion and say, is this emotion telling me the truth or is it lying to me? And be curious about it. And that's where the mindfulness and that's where the therapy or coaching comes in. But being able to say like, okay, I'm feeling anxiety. Is this anxiety warning me because, you know, I have X dollars in my bank account and it means that I'm going to have to go either raise money or, you know, take out a loan or, you know, change some of my spending or budget in a different way or something like that? Or is that anxiety just there because, you know, there's uncertainty and I don't fully believe in myself, you know? So I'm not sure does that make sense, that difference between anxiety that's telling you the truth and anxiety that's lying?
Oh, no, that is exactly correct. And, you know, it also, I love what you're saying about going and finding that coach or that therapist to help you get through some of this, because what happens is you can't go to your employees and talk about it, because then they start looking for other jobs, because then they're like, oh, my goodness, you know, this thing's falling apart, when it's just a normal process that has to happen.
Totally.
In business. And then,
yes.
And then the families, you don't want to scare your families, so you become very isolated and feel like you're alone and the only one shouldering the burden. Having that coach or that therapist working with that is so important. I really believe that.
Yes, absolutely. And especially for the messaging and the communication and, you know, defining who you do let into that inner circle or who you do let into your sort of ultimate authentic truth. Because really, like, the more we isolate or the more we practice this, like, impression management that we do have to practice in some cases as you know, business owners, we do create shame because, you know, as you probably know, I mean, shame thrives in secrecy and it's created from that disconnect between like who we authentically believe we are and like what we're putting out there to the world. So when we can have people in our circle, and sometimes it just is that coach or that therapist, but if it can be a partner as well, or, you know, close friends or entrepreneurial, you know, friends, or they don't even have to be entrepreneurial, but just people who understand and whom you feel like you can actually have this transparent communication with, then it helps not only provide that consultation space, but also mitigate that shame that causes us to just ignore whatever's going on and then end up being screwed over because we never actually looked into what our difficult emotions were telling us and we're not prepared.
Oh, and all that shame leads to depression and that sense of helplessness and hopelessness. And that will cause your business to fail, whether anything else is going wrong or not. So
yes, absolutely. I mean, we know that, like, shame, unfortunately, there's this vicious cycle where shame causes isolation and then isolation causes more shame. So becoming aware of that is really important because we have to go against our instincts and we do have to reach out or set up things, you know, processes, whether it's someone reaching out to us or checking in or doing the difficult, uncomfortable thing that particularly for men, particularly for entrepreneurs who, you know, have some perfectionistic tendencies and whatnot, it can be more challenging to reach out in the face of that shame, but it's actually exactly what we need. And depression, again, like, we have so much research to support that it saps motivation, concentration, focus, productivity. So really, like, although it might not seem intuitive to be reaching out, spending time with friends, connecting, having intimate conversations with your partner or coach, it's really important, because ultimately it actually will make you more productive, more aware, and be able to see, you know, the forest for the trees and your business from a different perspective than you might see when you're in this myopic place of shame and self-criticism.
Well, and it's, you already said it. I mean, it's really that entrepreneurial spirit is about independence and being your own person and building on your skills and abilities. And it goes against a lot of those internal beliefs to actually stop and go get some help from somebody. And
totally.
But what is a good manager but somebody who knows when, okay, this is beyond my scope. I need to get somebody who can do this stuff and move forward and trust in them. It's the same way.
Exactly. And that's the emotional intelligence piece, right, that, again, is developed through consultation, therapy, coaching, but also contemplative practice, right? So, you know, martial arts, but also meditation, yoga, tai chi, qigong, like walking and just reflecting on your bodily emotions, somatic practices, and acupuncture. Like, there are so many different ways that we can become more aware of our emotions, and some education, of course, can be very helpful to recognize that, like I said earlier, they are there as signals and they are meant to be listened to and explored rather than numbed or suppressed. And, you know, entrepreneurs, oftentimes, yes, like, we're very independent. We pride ourselves on not necessarily needing help or, you know, being able to get things done. And at the same time, I mean, that can leave us very isolated, and it can also prevent us, like, one of the qualities of perfectionism is not being open to feedback per se, or being very defensive in the face of feedback, because we attach our identity and our self-worth to success or to the success of our business.
Yes.
And so we do this thing called globalizing, where, you know, if someone says, you know, that wasn't a great presentation, or, you know, that I don't, you know, you were kind of reactive in that meeting, or this seems like it was sort of a silly decision or whatever, and they give us some feedback, we don't hear the feedback they're giving us. We hear, you are a failure. You are bad. You are not good at, you know, owning this business. And so in order to preserve the ego or to preserve the sense of self, we will be completely defensive to that, and we won't be able to actually absorb that feedback, rather than, you know, the alternative, which is one where we reflect on what they're saying with self-compassion and recognize, like, okay, you know, here is an area that I can work on, because I'm an imperfect human being, and, you know, my actions do not necessarily define me. And of course, there are areas that I want to work on. And in many ways, like, it's great that we all have areas we want to work on, because if we were all maxing out our potential right now, I mean, you know, we wouldn't really be able to grow, and thus wouldn't be able to succeed further as entrepreneurs. So, you know, a huge part of this work and really optimizing our both our mental health and our potential and success as entrepreneurs is being able to reflect on those areas of growth, and, you know, take feedback and ask for help and just learn these new skills and different ways of relating to ourselves and to others that we may not have benefited from when we were children, you know, taking care of family members or, you know, trying to protect ourselves from bullies who were criticizing us, or, you know, wherever we started to develop this really hyper independent way of relating to ourselves in the world.
I think that's very important and essential, because it plays over into the entrepreneurial's role as manager too. I mean, that, you know, if you're doing everything, you're going to get bogged down and only see what you're doing. You have to, you know, you hire people because you think they have skills. You need to step back. And as a perfectionist, you have to learn to be happy with excellence. And, you know, that might be that person's idea of perfection. It may not be your idea of perfection. You may, oh, you should have done it this way. But look at their work. Is it excellent? If it's excellent, you're going to thrive and you're going to do well and learn to accept excellence and not necessarily always having to have perfection.
Yeah, and treating not only yourself as a human being who is imperfect and, you know, fallible, but also your employees as such. And, you know, that's, again, where this work is so important, because – it's all about recognizing our, you know, it's mindfulness. It's all about recognizing our urges or our instincts and then being able to stay with that, sit with it, and maybe do something differently. So for a lot of the clients that I work with, you know, they're hiring people and they're having a lot of trouble surrendering to that idea of like, let this person own this area of the business. And they are used to micromanaging and they're used to, you know, doing it their way and it being absolutely perfect, but it's not efficient. And so a big part of this is like actually being more comfortable with the difficult feelings that bubble up when a person maybe doesn't meet your expectations, and being able to check in and be like, are these realistic expectations that I have for this person? Are they truly not meeting expectations? And, you know, we need to have some conversations about that, and I need to support them in some way, or ultimately maybe I need to fire them and find someone else. Or is this about me and my unrealistic expectations? And just being able to become a better leader by understanding some of those types of things.
Exactly.
And so there's a lot that comes down to leadership, and then also culture, right? I mean, you know, depending on how big your team is and what the, you know, whether or not you have people working in an office with you or whether it's remotely or whatever, you know, that culture is so important, and it really does trickle down from the leaders. And so being able to, if you're modeling this like self-awareness and emotional intelligence and, you know, compassion, which, by the way, compassion is very much about expectations and support. So it's not about, you know, anything goes and I'm just here to nurture all these people. I mean, yes, you do play a certain like nurturing, leading, reparenting role as a leader in some ways, but also, you know, that means having expectations for your employees. So being able to have that type of culture or model that type of culture is going to, again, affect like the entire state of your business and the entire whether or not people are productive, efficient, happy, all of that kind of stuff that I'm sure is important to any business owner or should be important to any business owner because it does track back to success and retention and everything like that. So that's where like it's just so, so important to be able to check in and become super self-aware and emotionally intelligent yourself and learn to not react and learn to ask yourself like what you need and where your limitations are as a leader.
And I think that is, you know, you're hitting on all these key things that I've seen over and over and over. And you talked earlier about having your self identity and your self worth wrapped up in the entrepreneur role and being the boss. But there's also the identity that your employees have and how they perceive you. And if you're able to pass that on, that empathy and that caring, but also here are the limits. These are my expectations. Yeah. I expect excellence from you. And it's amazing how they will lift you up and hold you up if you do that. And when one of them sees you maybe not demanding excellence somewhere, they'll call you on it. And you don't have to be the watchdog all the time because you have set that identity. And I love what you're saying. I love what you're doing. This is pretty awesome. So thank you, Megan.
Thank you. Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And, yes, I mean, I think what you just said there is really important. And, I mean, we with our employees, like we do want to foster this autonomy, right? Like you don't want to feel like you have to be micromanaging. Same thing, like people don't want to be a helicopter parent either, right? The goal is not to constantly be watching and looking over people and making sure that they're doing their work. But it's this is a huge part of the hiring process. So you certainly don't want to, you know, just hire anyone and then expect that you can foster that kind of autonomy. But, you know, look for those qualities that an employee that would show integrity and autonomy and a desire to, you know, pursue excellence and all that kind of stuff and growth and all of those types of things. And then you can check in. And I mean, there are opportunities for like 360 feedback, for example, where you can learn about yourself as a leader and what would be helpful. And recognizing too that like, especially millennials who are, you know, employees for a lot of us these days, yeah, the paycheck is important, but they do really want that sense of like meaning and they want to respect their leader. You know, they don't want to work for someone that they don't respect or that they don't value. So again, like all of this is really important for being able to connect and have that transparency and authenticity and earn the respect that, you know, you deserve as a leader.
Well, and I think you also mentioned, you know, when you start talking about parents, a lot of times being that entrepreneur is being a parent too, because sometimes you may be asking your employees to do things they've never, ever tried, and you have to be okay with letting them fail so they can learn and become the employee that you hired, you know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, we want with ourselves and with everyone around us, we want to have this, still, as I said, expectations for integrity and responsibility and self-awareness and all of that. But it also means that we expect that we and the people whom we're leading or the children whom we're parenting they are imperfect and they are going to make mistakes. And if we create a culture, whether it's in our family or whether it's in our workplace, if we create a culture of fear in which employees or children feel like they can't take a risk, or if they take a risk and they fail, then they will be berated, or, you know, their support will be depleted, or they won't be loved unconditionally, or they won't be supported in that process, they're not going to take that risk, and you're not going to have much movement, and it's going to be incredibly frustrating in your company, or you're going to have children who are very fearful. And so being able to, again, offer that, you know, it all comes back to that attachment, right? Like being able to offer that secure base where either the child or the employee can kind of, you know, go off and try these types of things with integrity and with a desire to succeed. But when they don't succeed, because inevitably there are failures or, you know, bumps along the way, there's a space for like support and consultation where, you know, you can work through it and see like what went wrong, you know, what do we need to do differently next time? What did we learn from this? What do you need for the future? Not unlike, I always say it's just like a great athletic coach, you know, like you go, I'm a soccer player. And so I always use the example of like, you know, you're on the soccer team, you know, you're expected to show up for practice at whatever time it is. If you don't show up for practice, you probably won't play in the game. You know, but if you miss that penalty kick, you're not going to get kicked off the team. Your coach is not saying you are a terrible soccer player and I don't want you here anymore. They're going to say like, okay, that's, you know, yeah, you messed up. Like, that's okay. We all mess up at times. What went wrong? What do you need to practice to make sure that, you know, you're going to make the goal next time?
And like a coach, a good parent does the exact same thing. So does a good entrepreneur. Use that failure as a teaching moment and let
exactly.
them grow. And foster, you know, so it's, you're not playing head games with them, and you let them know that if there's anybody on the team making that penalty kick, you're the one I want out there. So, you know, just because you missed it doesn't stop that. And, that's so important. Wow, Megan. Well, this is amazing. Where can my listeners get a hold of you and find out more about what you do?
Yeah, I mean, please go to my website. It's just my first name, last name.com, Megan Bruno, MEGAN BRUNEAU.com. You can also find me on Instagram, which I put a lot of sort of inspirational content out there that I think is not like the cheesy, like annoying inspirational content, if that makes sense. I'm pretty transparent about my own battles with mental health struggles. I have struggled with, you know, eating disorders for many years and anxiety and depression, and can talk a lot about my own healing journey with that. You know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on YouTube, I'm on Facebook, I have a Facebook page. And you can also just email me at megan@meganbrunot.com. I'd love to hear from you. And I have a podcast, as I said, I'd love for you to listen to if this interests you. It's, as I said, called The Failure Factor. It's on iTunes and everywhere else. And we talk about failures and what people learn from failures for the most part. So it's a really great way to remind people that failure is just part of the process, and learning how to dance with that is really the greatest skill that we can learn.
Wow, that is such an important message that I think, you know, that's one of the problems that we're facing with our young generation now. Us parents have blocked and tried to keep our kids from feeling failure and experience that, because we want them to have such a happy childhood that unfortunately we're setting them up for failure as adults. And I think it's brilliant that you're doing that.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, we could do a whole show on that, but I think it's so important you're sharing that message because, yes, like the way to, as I always say, like, quote unquote, win at life is not to get to a place where everything is comfortable, because that's impossible, right? Like, really, we're always going to experience uncomfortable emotions. We're always going to experience anxiety and sadness at times, and frustration and disappointment. And so, you know, when children are coddled to a point at which they don't ever feel those things, or they don't learn how to feel those things, they don't know how to support themselves once they get into the real world. So it's really important to teach, you know, how to support oneself and let a person experience an emotion and recognize that emotions come and go. And the way to get through that is self-compassion and connection and self-care and, you know, acknowledging the impermanence of it all, rather than trying to live a life in which you avoid any difficult emotion.
Exactly. That is so true. And more people need to listen to it. Unfortunately, probably the people who are listening to you and I aren't those people, but the more we get our message out, right? Exactly. The more we get the message out, the more platforms we're on, the more people we're going to get with that message. So
totally.
Thank you again for doing that.
Yeah, so I'm trying to infiltrate through Forbes and, you know, hit all the entrepreneurs who don't want to feel anything and hope they come back
to
more
exactly
of a spiritual
right.
mental health perspective. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me, John. This has been great.
Thank you. Well, that concludes our interview today. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and especially I'd love to thank Megan Bruneau, and check her out on her website and her blog, and follow her on Instagram as well. But I want you to come listen to our blog at Mainstream Mental Health Radio. You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio. Follow us on the Mental Health News Radio Network. And share our website, mainstreammentalhealth.org. And remember, life is what happens while you're making plans. So buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.